welcome back to another episode of Friday Food Fight. My name is Wes Christian, CEO of Food Handler Solutions, and I am joined once again by Mr. Bart Christian, nationally recognized school nutrition industry speaker, and a very special guest. Bart, why don't you introduce our guest for this week, and we'll jump right into this week's topic.
Wes, it's my great pleasure to introduce my good friend Danny Brazell. And Danny, I guess we've known each other going on a decade, right?
Yeah. You, Wes, and I were in a mastermind 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah, and been friends ever since. And yep. Now, it's funny how I've had the great pleasure, as we've done so many shows, to interview and to talk with friends, you know, people I've known for a long time. And, you know, every time I get one of my friends' resumes and their bio, I just have to sit back and laugh and go, these people are way too smart to be my friend. And, because not only are you, Danny Brazell, my good friend, nationally recognized speaker, top selling author, coach, trainer, the whole nine yards, but you've got a PhD. What's your PhD in, Danny?
Well, not to impress anybody, Bart. When I got accepted into my PhD program, it said, congratulations, you've been accepted into our Doctor of Philosophy program in education. And I thought to myself, oh, that's what PhD stands for. So I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. Don't be too impressed.
I told somebody one time, they said, what's your degree in? I said, I have a PhD in HN. And they said, what's that? I said, I have a doctorate in hard knocks, until they reminded me that Knox starts with a K. But Danny, I know you've done a lot of things. As I was reading through, I didn't realize that you're a tenured professor in the teacher education department at Cal State University. And you've been that for quite a while. And
I actually have moved on from there. I'm a faculty advisor now with the Cal State Teach program, but really the last 5 years I've changed gears, co-founded a company called thereadinghabit.com. So we're actually now the world's largest reading engagement program, working throughout developing countries throughout Africa, India, Pakistan, and Indonesia.
And you once hosted a TV show, right, called People Make a Difference?
I did. I wish I'd had you. I'd had our old friend Gary Barnes on and a couple other people from the Mastermind. I can't believe I didn't have you guys on.
Well, I didn't realize that you have spoken to so many audiences across, not just in the U.S., but you've spoken to groups internationally.
Yeah, five continents. No, I still have to get Australia and Antarctica.
And you've authored 16 books. And I just read your latest book, Leadership Begins with Motivation. And I found that book to be very, very interesting. And when we talked a little bit, you told me kind of the story about the philosophy of putting that together. Why don't you share that with us? Because I think that's a great book.
Well, actually, the story is kind of funny because all of us had the same coach, and he showed us how to create this book with your picture on the cover, and all of us made that same book. Nobody ever bought my book, and basically, I hadn't written the book. I just created the cover, and at the beginning of the pandemic, all of a sudden, I had a whole bunch of people buying the book, and so I sent them an email saying, hey, because of the pandemic, Amazon's taking a long time. Do you mind if I get this to you in a month? And everybody said, yeah, no problem, and I told my wife, I'm like, gosh, I got to write a book this week, and so I had already had the title. So the title was Leadership Begins with Motivation. And then I had the subtitle is, I don't even remember, the subtitle is 33 Unique Ways to Think and Act Like a Successful Leader That Will Transform Your Professional and Personal Life, yada, yada, yada. And so I knew that I had to keep that title, and I had to come up with 33 chapters. And I had the idea, I'm like, well, wait a sec, motivation ends in ation. Ation means to take action. And that's what everybody has to do. And so I created every chapter around something ending in ation. So determination, inspiration, perspiration. And it is actually one of the easiest books I've ever written. And I've accumulated, you know, as a speaker, I basically on my computer have about 500 file folders on, if I ever need to find a story on loyalty, here's a story on loyalty or on responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of inserted all of those stories into the book. And it's my kind of reading. It's based on growing up, I listened to Paul Harvey on the radio, and I love his little 5-minute anecdotes. And that's about the length of my attention span. And so I wanted to create a book that was good bathroom reading, but positive. We have too much negativity in the world today. And I just wanted to really inspire people and get them laughing a little bit and get them thinking as well.
You know, one of my favorite words is fascination. Mm. And, you know, I think that's the kind of the model that I've tried to live my life by the past few years is, you know, rather than stressing over things, be fascinated over things. You know, look at, take kind of a wow mentality. And I think there's a lot of that in this book. I found this book to be very inspirational in so many different ways. And I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that, Bart.
Yeah. Well, I'm fascinated that you wrote a book in a month. And I, you know, most people, when they think about, you know, that task alone would just be overwhelmed completely. But it's a testament to how prepared you were for that occasion and the ability that you've kind of had that forethought to, you know, be able to do that in such a short time frame. Tell our viewers a little bit about what you do on a regular basis to really stay on the top of your game and to make sure that you are prepared for any scenario.
Well, West, you know, you wing it. You wing it and you try and look like you know what you're doing. I was blessed. I was a journalist before I was a teacher, and so I have the writing in my background. I actually, as a speaker, this a week was a long time to write a book, West. The quickest I ever did one was, it was between me and another speaker for a school district outside of Houston, Texas. And it was a pretty lucrative speaking engagement. And I asked the conference organizer, I said, well, what's the biggest challenge that your teachers are facing right now? And she said, oh, working with English language learners. I'm like, unbelievable. I have a book called Working with English Language Learners. And if you book me, I'll make sure all of the people in your audience get a complimentary copy of the book. And she's like, you would do that? I'm like, I would do that for you. And she's like, oh my, and she signed the contract right there. I called up my designer, Janice, that night. I said, hey, Janice, can you design me a cover? I got to write a book tonight. And I wrote that book and I got the gig. And, you know, sometimes necessity is the mother of invention. And so I kind of do a lot of stuff by the seat of my pants. But that's what I love about you two is you're all about taking action. So it drives me nuts when I'll speak at these conferences and there's always at least one of the speakers is called a thought leader. I'm like, what the heck is a thought leader? There's plenty of people that think all the time. I'm a results leader.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. And, you know, as far as, you know, results are concerned, you know, is there anything that you do on a regular basis, whether it be a daily reading, a daily meditation, you know, daily exercise to really stay prepared and fit for, you know, the days ahead?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Wes. I mean, that's really my passion is habits. It's tiny habits produce huge results. When I was teaching, I taught all age levels from kindergartners to rocket scientists. And I always tell the little ones, and I would actually say this to older people as well. I'm like, you know, it's not the big things that matter. It's the little things mean everything. You know, you don't see a whole lot of difference if you just walk for 10 minutes a day. But if you look over a year, you see the difference compound over the year. It's just like investing money in the bank. It's that compounded interest that you're getting all the time. So, you know, all three of us, I know, are avid readers, you know, and it doesn't, this is my specialty is reading with people. And I always tell this to people, remember this, it doesn't matter what you read. What matters is how much you read. You know, it doesn't matter if you're reading James Joyce or James and the Giant Peach. People who read more read better. And in one of my books, Read, Lead, and Succeed, which I'm going to give to everybody in your audience, I think in the show notes, you can just put the readleadandsucceed.com so everybody gets a complimentary copy of the book. But that was one of the things that I learned when I was interviewing the Fortune 500 CEOs was, first of all, this was interesting. Over half of them are dyslexic. And secondly, all of them read. Now, some of them, and actually quite a few of them, when they were doing their reading, they were reading like comic books or reading, you know, some people, all they have to do is read business reports. But, and, you know, some CEOs love mysteries and crime novels, but it doesn't matter that you can look at any field and you're going to see that the most successful people in their field are all avid readers. I could have kissed LeBron James before the NBA Finals, his first one when he was with Miami. They showed him in the locker room and he was reading The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. I'm like, man, you just did more for reading than anything I can do. You know, Teddy Rose, I love reading presidential biographies. Teddy Roosevelt, even president, they read three books a day, which is unbelievable. You look at like one of the richest in the world, Warren Buffett, he spends all of his time reading. every single day. And so, you know, there's plenty of readers that are not necessarily leaders, but I've always said I've never seen in the history of the planet an effective leader that was not an avid reader.
Yeah. So I got a question, Danny. You know, so many people say that they're slow readers, and so they listen to audiobooks.
Yep.
And that is a big trend now, is people listening to audiobooks. I've even listened to an audiobook with the book in my hand and read it at the same time on a higher speed, you know, but what's the comprehension difference between reading something and listening to something?
Very little. I actually always endorse being read aloud to. If you look at, I'm kind of a dork over the last, I've read the government reports over the last 75 years, Becoming a Nation of Readers, Why Johnny Can't Read, the National Reading Panel. I mean, they're always about 3,000 pages long. And it's always around page 100 where there's this short little paragraph that says, the research seems to conclude the single best way to improve reading is to be read aloud to. And then they never say it again because it sounds way too simple. You know, one of my friends and mentors, Jim Trelease, he said, if reading aloud costs $129, every parent in America would rush out and buy it. And if we found out kids didn't like it, they would mandate it in the school system tomorrow. It's such a little thing, but I always encourage people, and I know the three of us all believe in this, your car is a mobile university. You can be listening mm-hmm. to audiobooks while you're driving. When you're in the gym, you know, this gets back to Wes' question about daily habits. I mean, I think every day we need to read a little, we need to exercise a little, we need to learn a little, and you can do them all at the same time if you're actually organized. And so those people that are listening to books, and a matter of fact, if you're dyslexic, if you look at those CEOs that are dyslexic, that's largely what they do, is they're listening to audiobooks. So there's nothing wrong at all with that. And it's actually one of the things I preach to parents that are trying to help out their kids. I'm like, the single most important thing you can do is to read aloud to your kid. And I mean, comprehension wise, I think there's something to be said about reading it on your own because you don't listen to another person's interpretation of the text. I can get that. But, you know, some people might not be able to create those vivid images as well. So why not listen to, if you listen to the Harry Potter books on tape, and I would encourage anybody to do it, they have actor Jim Dale does 134 different voices. And it's unbelievable. I'm actually listening to a wonderful book right now called Bloody Jack and the Woman. She does so many different voices. She's just a hoot. And I'm like, gosh, I very rarely would rather listen to the audiobook than read the book myself. But gosh, she's so great. I just think it's just wonderful what she's done with these audiobooks.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually saw something from Warren Buffett not too long ago. It was actually a couple of days ago. He said the secret to success, doesn't matter what industry you're in, boils down to three things. Look at who you're spending time with and who your influences are. The second thing was don't procrastinate. And the third thing was go to bed every night just a little bit smarter than you woke up that morning. And it really goes back to what you're talking about, just all that constant, that mindset of constantly reading and learning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jim Rohn said that poor people have big TVs, rich people have big libraries. If you can just instill one simple habit where, you know, for 2021, again, people are like, well, you only read for a minute. I'm like, that's fine. If you can just commit to 1 minute a day, because it's very difficult just to read for a minute. Once you start reading something you're interested in, you'll read a little bit longer. We know this is how habit formation, it's the same philosophy as if you say, okay, I'm only going to exercise for 5 minutes at the gym today. That's great. Because once you get to the gym, it's very difficult. You're like, I'm already here. Why am I just going to spend 5 minutes? But even if you just did 5 minutes, that's five more minutes than you were doing before. And over time, you're going to see a huge amount of progress. So I completely agree with what you're saying, Wes. I mean, put something positive next to your bed. One of the best tips I give people is turn off the TV news and read something positive. And I don't understand why people sit there and they read the news. Unless you're going to do something about it, does it serve you? If it doesn't serve you, if it only just makes you angry, then get it out of your life. Read something positive, something motivational. There's plenty of options out there. I wanted to write a book that got people thinking about possibilities rather than worried about political differences or, you know, natural disasters and all, and feast and famine happening in the world. So, you know, enrich your life. Don't set yourself up for failure.
Oh, amen to that. And I, Wes, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit to a question here, because I think if it kind of goes along this. Danny, what's the connection? You know, most of our audience is primarily, not exclusively, but primarily people who work in the child nutrition industry. So what is the connection between good nutrition habits and good reading habits?
Guys, that's a cool question, Bart. I mean, there was actually, I read an article of all places, Cigar Magazine. I was in a waiting room, and that was the only thing they had to read. And, you know, as President Reagan said, his biggest fear in life was being stuck in a hotel with nothing to read. That's basically my biggest fear in life, is being stuck in a waiting room. And I usually have this policy not to touch magazines that sick people have been touching all day, but I had nothing else to read. And there was this great article on Cigar Magazine that in Cuba, when the people are rolling the cigars, they have a person standing at a microphone reading books to all of these people. And Cuba, a communist country, has like a 100% literacy rate because everybody's being read to all the time. It's a healthy habit. I mean, this is something that all of the people that you're serving, you know, nutrition, why not have books being read in the cafeterias? And to me, if I'm a cafeteria worker, it also gives me something positive to listen to. I mean, instead of whining kids all day and people complaining, there's actually a great series. A friend of mine, Jarrett, I can never pronounce his name. Jarrett Krozaska, I think.
Yeah. The Lunch Lady superhero guy.
Lunch Lady books. They're just fantastic. You know, because let's face it, when you're a cafeteria worker, my father was a librarian, and I don't care what media you ever watch, they always portray the librarian in a very specific way. They're always squirmy, glasses, nerdy. And it's the same thing with like a lunch lady. The lunch lady's always got to be this gruff lady in a hairnet serving sloppy joes and yelling at the kids. And we all know that that's not true. And so again, for your industry, this is a great way to incorporate literacy, is to get some audiobooks online while the kids are eating. And you know, I was blessed. I taught for many years in the inner city, and it was fascinating to me, like, just seeing the differences between the schools I went to and the schools my students were going to. I mean, they were serving pizza at breakfast. I'm like, wow, you're creating a really bad habit in the kids. And just by doing some simple things, there was a great study at Harvard did a study. By the way, whenever I cite research, I always say Harvard did the study. So makes you sound much more knowledgeable. So Harvard did this study. I think it was at Massachusetts General Hospital. And it was for the doctors and the nurses in the hospital cafeteria. They only had bottled water inside two refrigerators. And so they just redesigned the cafeteria. So they still had the water in the refrigerators, but then they put them in baskets throughout the cafeteria. And just that one thing increased water consumption at the hospital by 24% in the first month. And it was funny because they asked people, well, why are you drinking water? And they're like, oh, no, because I was thirsty and all this. And they're like, no, that's not true. They didn't even realize they were doing it consciously, because soda consumption was going down when they had water as an offering. And so these are the types of things that in child nutrition is, well, what can we do to improve people's habits? There's a great book by James Clear called Atomic Habits. And I love one of the things he talks about was he always likes to eat apples, but whenever he buys apples, he puts them in the bottom of his refrigerator, and 3 weeks later they would spoil. And he's like, eh. So he just started putting the apples out on the counter, and now he eats the apples all the time. It's simple little things. We try to overcomplicate everything. It's simple little things that have a huge impact long term.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the old saying, little hinges swing big doors. Absolutely. And I couldn't agree with that more. Kind of taking a step back, you know, we've been talking a lot about reading, and you're actually known as the International Reading Ambassador. And tell us a little bit about that title and really what your mission is.
Well, thank you for that, Wes. So I'm America's leading reading ambassador. A friend of ours said that when Muhammad Ali was asked, why are you the greatest? And Muhammad Ali laughed. He said, I'm the greatest because I told people I was the greatest. And so I started telling people I was America's leading reading ambassador. People hear something enough, they start to believe it. Now I actually might be able to have the claim just because I'm a distinguished visiting professor at the American University in Cairo in Egypt. And so I did all kinds of trainings throughout Egypt when I was there. I've done tons of presentations throughout India. And really, I'm just trying to really show people that it's little things. I mean, this is the big thing I'm always pushing to people. I'm like, gosh, if you can get 20 minutes a day, you know, it's basically my reading engagement program. It's a 67-day program. People ask, why is it 67 days? I'm like, well, a lot of people will say it takes you 21 days to change a habit. And to those people, I say, show me the research on that. It's completely a lie. I can actually tell you exactly where the number comes from. It comes from a great book that everybody should read called Psycho-Cybernetics by Dr. Maxwell Maltz, written in 1960. And in the preface of that book, Dr. Maltz said that he was a plastic surgeon. He said he noticed it took about 21 days for people to get used to their new faces. Well, a lot of personal development gurus, a lot of people that I respect, started telling people it took 21 days to change a habit, and it's based on no research. And I'll tell you why that's dangerous. Is let's say, Wes, you decide to go on a diet and you stick to it for 21 days, but on day 22, you fall off the wagon. Well, blame yourself. Well, there's no research even showing that number. So there was actually a great study done at the University of London in 2009 on habit formation, and they found it took anywhere from 18 to 254 days to change a habit, and the average was 66. Well, I don't like the number 66, so I gave it a bonus day, 67 days. The other number I always tell people is 20 minutes. So there was this study around the world looking at successful students trying to figure out common characteristics, and they found one which just shocked them. It was the number of minutes spent reading outside of school. They looked at the low students, the middle of the road students, and the high students. So the kids in the 20th percentile, your F students, they average less than a minute a day of reading outside of school. That's not really a surprise. That's probably why they're at the bottom of the class. This did surprise researchers. The kids in the middle of the class, the 70th percentile, the C students, they spent 9.6 minutes a day reading outside of school. And so if I'm doing a parent training, this is when the room gets really quiet and the first hand raises and the parent asks, wait a sec, are you saying if I can get my kid to read 10 minutes a day at home, I can take him from an F to a C? That's exactly what I'm saying. The research is pretty conclusive on this. But what was even more mortifying was the kids at the top of the class in the 90th percentile. How much time do they spend reading outside of school? Was it 3 hours a day? No. Was it 1 hour a day? No. It was just over 20 minutes a day. 20 minutes a day. And here's the cool thing. It doesn't have to be consecutive. So if you can find so I tell people, like, if you're driving your kid to school back and forth, it takes 10 minutes each way, put on an audiobook. You just took care of your 20 minutes there. One of the best things I'll teach parents, you know, I used to work in the inner city and parents would say, oh, I don't have anything to read in my home. I'm like, oh, I bet you do. President Bush Sr. 30 years ago signed a law that said every single television set in America has to have closed captioning. So I always tell parents, turn on the closed captioning. And parents will say, well, wait a sec. If the show's in English and the subtitles are in English, what good does that do? I'm like, well, that's a fair point. Let me make a point. Weston Bart, have you ever watched this show with subtitles and not looked at the captions?
No.
I kind of watch it. Yeah, I look at the captions. Yeah.
It's very difficult to do. Your brain is drawn to those captions. And there's actually research that supports this. So if you look at reading scores around the world, the more kids watch TV, what do you think happens to their reading scores? Do they go up or they go down?
Down.
They go down all the time in every country in the world except for one. The country with the highest reading scores in the world watches the most TV in the world. It's Finland. How can this be? Well, Finland makes really bad TV shows. So they import Gilligan's Island and Brady Bunch from America, and they have to put subtitles on all of them. The kids are reading all the time. So one of the easiest tips I give to anybody, if you really want to improve your reading, turn on the closed captioning. It's instantly going to get you print every single day.
That's a great tip. Yeah, that's a really good tip. I've never thought about the closed captioning because I do. If there's closed captioning on, I read it, even if it's just out of curiosity to see how accurate the closed caption is. I still read it.
Absolutely. It might not be the best spelling exercise, but it is good for helping you get exposure to print.
Yeah, I might not win a spelling bee afterwards, but definitely educational still.
Okay, so that makes me want to jump to something else that's in your bio, and that's because I think this goes hand in hand. Tell us about the Lazy Readers Club. Because that, reading subtitles is just a lazy way of reading, but it's reading. So yeah. Tell us about the concept of the Lazy Readers Club, because I think that just sort of kind of ties in.
Well, this really ties into habit formation, Bart, because if you really want a habit to stick, you got to make it as simple as possible, because we will, human beings will always look for the shortcut. What's the easiest way to do this? I mean, if it's going to take you a long time to go to the gym, you won't go to the gym. You know, so you got to make it easy for yourself. Same thing with reading. I was a professor for many years at Cal State University, and I always start off class by reading a chapter from a book to my students and getting all excited and giving them a book talk about other books I'm reading. And people always ask me, like, hey, Danny, can you give us some book recommendations, but nothing too tough? And this is one of the big things. I think most people, when they think reading, they associate it to the drudgery of reading that they were exposed to in school. You know, we're forced to read things in school. And it's such a horrible philosophy. I mean, I remember being forced to read the Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne, where Hester Prynne, she wears an A on her chest because she committed adultery. And I want to, after reading that book, I wanted to have a B on my head because I was so bored reading that book. It was drove me nuts that I was forced to read it. And I say this to parents, I'm like, you know, the little boy who only reads Captain Underpants is going to be a better reader than the little boy who won't read anything. I mean, Captain Underpants is our gateway drug to Shakespeare, but we got to get them hooked first. So lazy readers, every single, if any of your viewers want to join, it's a free subscription. Once a month for the rest of your life, I update it with 10 new book recommendations, 3 or 4 adult level, 3 or 4 young adult level, and 3 or 4 children's level books, all under 250 pages. So you have something to read when you're stuck in a boring meeting or at the doctor's office. Again, too many people, they associate reading with, oh, I have to read this 900-page Russian novel by Dostoevsky. That's not going to help you at all. Here I am, Mr. PhD, back when we could actually go out before the pandemic. If I go to a party, before I go to the party, I always stop by Barnes & Noble, go over to the children's section, and I'll read 10 little picture books of biographies of famous people, you know, and I always sound like, oh, wow, how do you know so much about Elon Musk? I'm not going to tell him I just read a 32-page picture book that gave me a whole bunch of information about him. You know, I it's amazing. I always think children's books really get a bad rap. I had a friend actually passed away yesterday. And so I was just writing a card to his wife. And the words that always soothed me was Dr. Seuss said, don't cry that it's over, smile because it happened. And that's something I got out of a Dr. Seuss book. I mean, we put down children's literature, and I'm like, most of your most important values come from children's literature. And then you can progress to whatever. But the basics, you know, those nursery rhymes, those Grimm's fairy tales, they give you values. And so lazy readers, you know, I'm sorry, Bart, long answer to your short question. Lazy Readers is just designed to get people reading for fun and reading short books. You know, again, I love presidential biographies. One of my favorite books is The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt by Edmund Morris. It actually won the Pulitzer Prize in 1979, and it impressed President Reagan so much he made Edmund Morris his official biographer. And it's part of a trilogy. The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt takes you to the moment Teddy Roosevelt becomes president. Theodore Rex is the second book in the series. It takes you through the Roosevelt presidency. And the third book in the series is called Colonel Roosevelt, which takes you through what he did after his presidency. And in The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt, I mean, unbelievable. I mean, he was sick all the time as a kid, so he spent all of his time reading. You know, and he was a speed reader. He had a photographic memory. He could read in 6 languages. They say you could give him an 800-page book in Latin at dinner, and he would quote pages to you at the breakfast table. They estimate by the time he was 30 years old, Teddy Roosevelt had read over 20,000 books. So now you have to say what my little ones used to say. Say, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So I'm like, all right, kids. So I'm like, all right, kids, we got to read a lot of kids' books. I mean, I always tell people that. I read 10 books a day now. Many of them are scratch and sniff and pop up, but I do read 10 books a day. So you really, and it makes you more interesting. That's what is great about reading. You should be, I love that word you gave earlier, Bart, fascination. We should be fascinated. One of the reasons I was a journalist was I was always curious to learn about totally different things. And I think if you're not learning, you're not growing. And so Lazy Readers is just a way to really kind of open up people's curiosity and give them that fascination you were talking about.
Well, it sounds like the scratch and sniff might also be an at-home COVID testing kit built into one, so you get a double whammy.
Uh-huh.
Speaking about kids' books and you know, really promoting to our students, you know, you mentioned LeBron James earlier and that image of him reading before the NBA championship back when he was with Miami. You know, he's obviously an influential person. We see him on television. People look up to him. But what I think a lot of school nutrition directors and school nutrition employees don't realize a lot of time is that the kids that walk through their line on a daily basis also look up to them as role models and influencers. What are some things that school nutrition directors and school nutrition professionals across the country can do to really help promote this I guess mind shift and really help promote reading to their students?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that, Wes. I mean, no matter what you do, you're always a teacher and a role model. And, you know, like it or not, if you're in nutrition and the kids are seeing you every day, they're looking at you. I tell this to parents, I'm like, giving a kid a passion for reading is like giving a kid a cold. You can't give it if you don't got it. Kids aren't stupid. They watch us all the time. And if they always see, if they see the nutritionist going out back to have a smoke, well, that's being imprinted on their brain. If they see the school nutritionist always providing healthy options, always providing a smile. I mean, as a teacher, that was a big one for me. I always, you know, I did a meet and greet with my students as they came into my door, whether it was my little ones or my older ones. Every single student I would spend about 15 to 20 seconds with as they came in the door, and I would say something positive to them. And the reason I did that was because I realized I might be the only person to say something positive to this kid today. That's very important. As a nutritionist, I mean, you're a role model to those kids. Can you smile? Can you address them by their name? Teach them some good habits, like always look at me in the eye and say good morning to me or good afternoon. And as reading, again, what I said earlier, I'm a big fan of and a big advocate of having time in the cafeteria where there's a book being read aloud. And you could have like the head nutritionist doing the read aloud. We've done that when I used to run my nonprofit. We did that at schools. And it was amazing at the end of the year how many of the kids, when they were talking about the year, that was the one thing that stood out with them. They loved coming into the cafeteria because they were always read aloud to. And even at a middle school. You know, when I taught at my middle school, I had this, I taught eighth grade special education, which it wasn't special education. It was 16 boys that nobody else wanted to teach. Eight African-American, eight Latino. And if they weren't miserable enough, they got stuck with the white dude as the teacher. And I was the first teacher in that school to have zero tardies. And the reason I had zero tardies is because I always started class with a Paul Harvey story. And the kids always wanted to hear the Paul Harvey story. What's it? And this is what I'm always trying to do now. And I realized I made a big mistake when I did the Leadership Begins with Motivation book, because I think it's really cool. There's all these great stories. But when I read it again, I'm like, wait a second. Most of these stories are about white men, Americans. You know, I'm like, wait a sec. I need to write a new book. And so the book I'm working right now is more female, minority, international people, to show people, you know, I was teaching fifth grade 25 years ago, and I remember I had a student, he said, hey, Ms. Purcell, my mama says the reason they call it the White House is because you got to be white to live there. And now I could say, not anymore. You know, that's what reading does, is it shows you all these different opportunities. And so I think it's really important that kids, I was reading a story, I wrote, there's actually a great podcast out there by Mike Rowe, the guy that does Dirtiest Jobs, yeah, called The Way I Heard It. And it's basically his homage to Paul Harvey, these quick little anecdotes. And he has a couple of them that are updated. So he has one story I love called The Story of Peter Hernandez. Do you know Peter Hernandez, the musician? Mm-hmm. You may have never heard of Peter Hernandez. Peter Hernandez was born in Hawaii. His father was a drummer from Brooklyn. His mother was a singer from the Philippines. And from a very young age, Peter, he had style. He could dance, he could sing. And at age four, he was the world's youngest Elvis impersonator. And then he gradually improved. He became James Brown and then Michael Jackson. He was so naturally talented. At age 18, his parents scrounged their savings. They bought him a one-way ticket to Hollywood so he could sign a big record deal. And within 1 week, he signed with the largest record label in the world. And they said, Peter Hernandez, we're going to make you the next Enrique Iglesias. Peter's like, I don't want to be Enrique Iglesias. They're like, well, with a name like Hernandez, we're going to make you a Latin pop sensation. He's like, I don't want to be a Latin pop sensation. I want to do rock and roll pop. I want to do Michael Jackson, James Brown. They're like, well, you're going to do it because you signed the contract. He said, rip it up. And they looked at him. They said, if we rip up this contract, we're going to tell every other record company your name, and you will never be able to sign another record deal again. He told them to rip it up, and they were true to their word. They made sure everybody knew who Peter Hernandez was, and he was down to his last dollar, couldn't get any work, looked up at the stars one night as he was praying to heaven, and all of a sudden he got an idea. He started laughing to himself because his dad was a big professional wrestling fan. He thought of his dad's favorite professional wrestler, and as he looked at the stars, he said, you know what, I need to make a change. So he changed his name, and since Peter Hernandez changed his name, he sold over 150 million records worldwide. He's won 8 Grammy Awards, and he's performed at the halftime show at the Super Bowl, not once, but twice. That was the night that Peter Hernandez changed his name to Bruno Mars. And so these are the stories that got my guys. Like, they always, when you get kids looking at like this, that's what you want to do. You got to be interesting, though. And that's, I mean, I read plenty of bad stories, too. But every time I'll read a book, the whole book can stink. But if there's one gem, then that book was totally worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an amazing story. I'd never heard that story before. I've heard that either. Yeah. So in our last couple of minutes, I'd love to hear your thoughts on kind of a little bit of what's going on in the world right now. Obviously, this has been a very challenging year for many school nutrition professionals and just people in general. I mean, we've all been going through just various shutdowns, stay-at-home orders. And what effect do these learning remotely, virtual learning, school closures, what effects do these things have on students and their reading?
Well, they're definitely going to have negative effects. I mean, my heart is really for children in poverty, and we're going to see that children in poverty were particularly negatively affected by this pandemic. It's devastating, and but I'm the optimist. I always look at the positives that come from things, and if there's one constant we've had in the history of the world, it's change. You know, we have to learn how to change. A negative from the pandemic is I don't believe there'll ever be a school day, a snow day again for kids, because now we understand how to do it virtually. But, you know, over 100 years ago, there was this environmental catastrophe on the planet. And it was basically that horses were pooping all over the street, and it was creating a huge public health hazard, and it was creating actually a global climate crisis as well. And they actually had seminars on this. They had these huge conventions trying to figure out how do we solve this climate crisis. And one guy solved the problem. His name was Henry Ford, and he created the automobile, so we didn't have horse poop on the streets anymore. Then we had automobiles. Right now, we're facing other climate changes, and I'm always a person that says, you know what? There's a person out there that's going to figure out how to solve it. It's pretty amazing to me how people rise to the occasion. I totally believe, you know, as negative as people are nowadays, that if there was an asteroid headed for Earth right now, that all the governments of the world would figure out how to destroy that asteroid together. If you actually always put all your resources, humans always amaze me. And this too shall pass, as it was written in a very good book. You know, there's gonna be a lot of negative repercussions, but I'm hoping that we look at the positives that have come out of this. We're reshaping education. Education, if you're talking about nutritional programs at schools, now we understand that it doesn't just have to be at the school. We can figure out ways to deliver these nutritional programs to the homes of our kids. And maybe that's a positive, because it's also giving us an opportunity to see into the homes of these kids, that a lot of the kids that we thought were doing all right. I used to do walk homes with my students, and you'd see that the poverty that some of these kids lived through. I'm like, wow, now I understand why the homework's not getting done. It's because there's nobody in the home. It doesn't mean I lower the expectation. It means I adjust the expectation. I'm like, okay, well, now I have to work around this. So now I need to make sure I'm staying after school for an hour so Rogelio can do his homework with me, because he doesn't have a place to do it at home. You never lower the expectation. That's garbage. you know, you have to figure out how to accommodate. And so I think maybe the benefit of the pandemic is it's making us rethink schools. You know, there's not one specific source. I was so disgusted with how the public schools in my district handled the pandemic that now I'm homeschooling my daughter. And I think she's getting 10 times better education from homeschooling than she was in what I used to think was a good public school program. But that's just my daughter. Every kid's a little bit different. Some people thrive in a specific environment. I've always thought when I hear people talking about education, there's not one right answer. There's 38 right answers. That's the problem, is people want it to be black and white. I'm like, it's not black and white. What works in Phoenix, Arizona doesn't necessarily work in Bismarck, North Dakota. And even within Bismarck, North Dakota, the school on this side, end of town works different than the school on this end of town. And even in that school, I can tell you this classroom is totally different than this classroom. And so that's what I'm hoping that it opens up people's eyes that way. And for all the people that used to gripe about education and now they have to spend some time at home with their kids every single day, now they have a little bit better perspective on, think about the teacher that has 38 strange kids in their classroom, and every one of those kids is different, how they have to accommodate them. Hopefully we have a little bit more appreciation for the challenges that our educators face every single day.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, last kind of question, kind of closing comments for us. First off, Danny, Bart, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a pleasure to talk with both of you. Danny, first to you, is there anything that you would like to leave our audience with? Any words of wisdom, motivational, inspirational kind of things that you'd like to just kind of part with?
Well, again, it's thank you, Wes. I mean, it's basically what we've been talking about, is it doesn't have to be the big thing. It's usually the little things that make all the difference, you know? So when I do reading engagement with kids and with teenagers and now with adults as well, you know, what I'm trying to do is, schools do a decent job of teaching kids how to read, but what good is it knowing how to read if you never want to read? I teach kids why to read, because I've never had to tell a kid, go watch TV. I've never had to tell a kid, go play a video game. And I never want to have to tell a kid, go read a book. I want them to think it's so freaking awesome that my punishment is I won't let them do it. When you can make it into the punishment, you know you're on the right track. And so all these people that are worried you're maybe self-conscious because you're not a good reader, there's no such thing as not a good reader. You always put the word yet. You can get better. Reading is not, there's all kinds of things called reading disabilities. Just so you know, every reading disability is curable, you know, but it takes time and it takes persistence, you know, those daily habits, those daily interactions. And so and I want everybody to smile a lot more. We need a lot more smile in the world. That's why I like US. That's why I love Bart. I mean, you guys are positive and you're doers.
Bart, anything from you?
Danny, thanks. So first thing I want to do is encourage everybody to go to the show notes when we get finished, get a copy of Danny's free book, go to the Lazy Readers Club. I've been on the site. There's so many, there's great information there, and the book recommendations are great. And, you know, and I encourage you to, you know, try to get a hold of Danny, because he is probably one of the brightest lights in the world right now. I got to say that. And, you know, Danny, you said something earlier, you know, this too shall pass. I got something else that comes from that same book and that same really good book. I used it last week on our show, and it's that, you know, think on those things that are good and that are lovely and that are perfect and that are edifying to your neighbors and edifying to yourself. Think on those things, because, you know, this world, in my personal opinion, is built around dividing us and tearing us down. And I think it's up to us to fight that individually and with our groups, because this whole pandemic has brought it really, really clear to me that it is so easy to become so pessimistic about things by just paying attention to the world and what's going on in areas, like you said earlier, that have absolutely, you can make absolutely no impact on. So think on those things that are going to build you, edify you, and start with a good book, a good audio book, because Danny's got the resources to line you in that direction. And I just, I appreciate you, Danny, so much. I'm inspired just by saying, I want to jump up and go read some Dr. Seuss.
Thanks for that, Bart. Actually, I should tell people, the book that you'll get, the Read, Lead, and Succeed book, I wrote it for a principal who didn't know how to engage his faculty. So I said, okay, I'll write you a book. So every week I give you a concept, an inspirational quote, an inspirational story, a book recommendation on a book you should read, but you're probably too lazy because you're an adult. So I also give you a children's picture book recommendation that demonstrates the same concept. You know, it doesn't matter if you're reading Dostoevsky or Dr. Seuss, folks. You know, readers are leaders. So keep that in mind. And again, Wes and Bart, thank you so much for having me today. And thanks for all that you do to bring joy into the world. God bless.
Well, thanks so much. And thank you guys again, everyone out there. This has been another episode of Friday Food Fight. We'll see you again next week at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Take care and have an awesome weekend.